Trying to get coaching cycles started and feeling like you just can't make it work? I've got the email course for you. Realistic Coaching Cycles is a mini course sent right to your inbox. It's 5 days of short videos that will teach you exactly what you need to do to start coaching cycles, document your work with a teacher, and help them implement the learning you've done together. Get it for free at buzzingwithmissb.com/cycles and start your coaching cycles today. Welcome to Instructional Coaching with Miss B, where we believe that every teacher deserves a coach and every coach does too. I'm Chrissy Beltran, an elementary teacher who became a coach, and I had to create my own coaching program that worked. Now I teach coaches how to design their coaching programs, build a school-wide action plan, and use differentiated strategies to support teachers. Plus, I've got a special spot in my heart for literacy coaches. Now let's dig into the episode. Hey, Coach, and welcome to episode 183, Creating Inclusive Spaces to Support Teacher Resiliency, with my guest, Nita Creekmore. We are wrapping up our series on motivation, morale, and mindset, because this is a big issue that we're having right now with our faculty. You know, they're struggling with morale, they're struggling with motivation. Our mindset is not always the best. And so I wanted to make sure that you had some tools to help you with this. I have a really great resource called SEL Tools for Teachers. So if you actually head to my store, buzzingwithmissb.com, and go to the shop, you can find my SEL, social emotional learning tools that you can use with teachers during PLC meetings or whenever you're working one-on-one with a teacher to help them figure out which things are within their control, how they can respond to different situations, and maybe what situations are kind of triggering for them. I also have a free resource that you might love called Coaching Resistant Teachers. It is a free email course that you can grab, and I think you would really enjoy it because it will help you kind of change the trajectory of the way that you're working with teachers who are being resistant to you or your support. It helps us walk through a process that will kind of analyze what's actually going on and make some positive change. You can grab that at buzzingwithmissb.com/resistance. And I have one more thing that you might want to know about. You've probably heard a lot about this idea of teacher resiliency, and it's one of the things that Elena Aguilar writes about. She talks about resiliency in her book Onward, and it's full of amazing monthly information and ideas for supporting teacher resiliency throughout the year. So I have a really cool study guide that you can use that Elena shared with me that you can use to work with a book study group or even just to help yourself work through the text. And so I'm going to share that with you. There's going to be a link for you in the show notes, either on the blog at buzzingwithmissb.com/episode183, or you can get them in the link in the podcast player. But it's a really great study guide that you might love. And so I'm excited to share my guest with you today because my friend Nita Creekmore has been working with Bright Morning on this idea of resiliency as well. And so the way she approaches it is so important and real that I wanted her to come on this podcast and share about it with us. Nita provides support to schools all about creating inclusive spaces that support teacher resiliency. So this is so essential right now when times are tough, and that seems to be the way things are always going to be now. I don't know why. So I'm really excited to welcome Nita today. So thank you for being here today, Nita.
Thank you for having me, Chrissy. So good to be here.
Oh, great. I'm so excited to talk to you about this topic. You've been on this podcast before, actually. You've been a guest, I think, in the first season where you're talking about building relationships. And so it makes sense that this topic would be still in your wheelhouse, right? So as a quick way to introduce yourself, I would love to know, who do you help and how do you spend most of your time and energy at work?
Okay. So I help a whole host of people, but as far as like professionally, I feel like, you know, definitely coaches. It's someone that I serve, other coaches, educators, teachers, and definitely thinking about resiliency in that area. I also help to like build and cultivate teams. And so just education as a whole, I feel like as far as me being an instructional coach is areas that like I serve, and I love serving in that capacity. Yeah.
I love it. And this is a bonus fun question. What is your favorite thing to do on a Friday night?
Oh, okay. My favorite thing to do on a Friday night is to take a hot bath, get into my pajamas, and watch a movie. Mm-hmm. Mostly like a Lifetime movie, because it's like low lift, low thinking, like that's I just sure. can kind of watch and really just be amused by it. I might have like a cup of tea or a glass of wine. Those are ways that I kind of like to like decompress on a Friday night.
I love it.
Definitely after the kids go to bed. And we've done like some family stuff, but yeah, that's usually how I spend my Friday evenings when I don't have anything going on.
Yeah, mine is very similar, except I don't watch Lifetime. My grandma used to watch Lifetime. And I used to tease her and I'd say, Lifetime, television for crazy women.
Maybe that's why I love it, because I'm like, this is so fun. Like, I mean,
Yeah, it is.
predictable. Like, most of the
Right.
time it's like predictable. It's like he's behind the door, but
Yeah.
like it's just one of those things that's like a low lift. Low lift.
Yes, I totally get it. I've been rewatching Monk because for the same reason. I just wanted my brain to rest because I watched like House of the Dragon and then I rewatched Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and all these very heavy drama shows and I was like, let's just watch Monk. So.
Yeah. There you go. Let's just do something easy for my
Yes.
brain. But yeah, that's usually how I like to spend my Friday
I
evening,
love it.
relaxing.
So your work has centered around this idea of resiliency, or a lot of your work anyway that I've seen. So can you explain what resiliency means, like when we're talking about a teacher context?
Ooh, it's like how we weather the storm, right? And so a lot of my work, and we're working with like Elena Aguilar. I work with Bright Morning, and then I also have like my own Love Teach Bless business as well. And thinking about how I can get through whatever it is I get through. How can I like add to my day-to-day, knowing that life is gonna happen? And I say this like life be lifin', like that's just how it is. How can I push through? How can I get through it? And not like in a way that sounds like, you know, like be positive or like smile or whatever, but like one of those things that's like, yeah, I faced something hard, and how did I get over that hump? Like, what did I do for myself to get over that hump? How did I speak life into myself to get over that hump? What are some strategies that I have in my tool belt for myself? Because everyone's is different, like to get over whatever the hump that life brings, and to be able to face that and get up each day. In education, because education is hard, and after the pandemic, it's like 20,000 times harder. And it's like one of those things is like, how can I get up each day and still look at myself in the mirror and say, "Girl, you did it. Like you pushed through."
I like that idea of the tools in your toolbox. Those are like your coping strategies or your mechanisms that you use to get through the hard things.
Yeah,
So
absolutely.
you talk about creating inclusive spaces as a way to build resiliency, right? So what does an inclusive space look like in a grade level PLC or across the campus?
Yeah, so okay, thanks for that question. I love that question. And I'm thinking about inclusive spaces for me is one that's psychologically safe. It's a space where folks can feel from any walks of life, any race, any gender, any non-gender, whatever, can come into that space and feel like, I feel safe here. I feel safe enough to speak my truth. I feel safe enough to offer my voice. I feel safe enough to do this work together, collaboratively with the folks that I'm with, right? And so like building that psychological safety is one, having a sense of belonging. Like, how do you create a sense of belonging amongst your team, amongst your staff, amongst your school, where everyone feels like they belong and where differences are celebrated, right? Whether it's the difference between me being Black, you know what I mean? And Latina, right? And so like even in thinking about that, like someone else is Black and someone else is Latina, how do we create those differences where we're like, yeah, we are different and we're celebrating those differences, and where can we find commonality as well? And so it's one of those things that's very, it can be very nuanced, and at the same time, it could be something that is so simple, right? In creating these psychologically safe environments where everyone feels like a part of the team, a part of the environment versus like othered. And so it's one of those cultivation strategies that you have to continuously build amongst your team. And a lot of that is through conversation. A lot of that is through transparency and authenticity. And some of those conversations may feel hard. And I don't want to call them hard, but I think that they can feel hard. It's one of those conversations that sometimes you may have like sweaty pits, or you can feel it in your body where you're like, oh, I feel uncomfortable having this conversation. But without the conversation, how can change happen? And so it's one of those things that that's ways to build that inclusive space, whether it's a team, whether it's like a teacher to admin relationship, any of those things that's happening, everyone feels like included in the space that you're in.
Mm-hmm. And so if I'm walking in, let's say that there's like a grade level and they're meeting together and I'm walking in mm-hmm. and I am observing this grade level, what are some indicators that inclusive space has been created?
Okay. Thanks. Another great question. So one, an indicator is where you see everyone talking. Everyone has mm-hmm. a voice. Like everyone feels like they have a voice and has contributed to the conversation. That's one great way. Another thing is healthy conflict. Like in the midst of it, that someone feels comfortable enough to be like, oh, I don't agree about that. Right. So if you're sitting in a meeting and they're saying, I don't agree, and they're doing so in a healthy way, well, they want to hear, why don't you agree? What are some reasons you don't agree? And really value, even in the midst of like conflict, that person's voice. Right. Mm-hmm. And when someone is not sharing their voice, lifting up that voice. So maybe it's like having equity of voice. Maybe it's mm-hmm. like, ooh, Chrissy, I heard that you haven't said anything or haven't talked, you know, you want to share about X, Y, and Z, right? Just something so simple as that is like, Chrissy, I see you, I've noticed you, and I've also noticed that you haven't engaged in the conversation. Is there anything you want to share? And whether or not you choose to or not, it's offering that space there at the same time. So that's one great way to notice mm-hmm. and note whether or not folks are sharing, feel that they can disagree, and folks feel valued in that. So it's one of those things. Also, if someone is, let's say, bringing emotions into the conversation, I won't even say that, right? And so I've been learning a lot about being able to lift up emotions, even at work. So it's one of the things that's super important to say, okay, oh, we just got this thing down from district. How's mm-hmm. everyone feeling about this new mm-hmm. curriculum or this new policy? How's everyone feeling about that? And let's talk about that so we can move through that in order to engage in this in a healthy way. All of those things coming together is how you would be able to like visually see an inclusive space, whether it's a team or whether it's a school. Those are some visuals right there.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Because I think that there's kind of mm-hmm. a misconception about inclusive spaces, you know, that it's more about mm-hmm. like, maybe the trappings of an inclusive space, like, you know, like people get very caught up in what's posted on the walls, or which I do think that can be a piece of it, obviously representation and things, it, you know, can be helpful. Right. But the real inclusion is the way that we are interacting with each other, right? That we are all mm-hmm. part of the conversation.
100%. It's one of those things that like the difference between like diversity and inclusion. Mm. Right. And so like diversity is like, yeah, I might be a part of the staff.
Yeah.
But how can you lift me being a part of the staff to a part where it's like, even being a part of the staff, I feel enmeshed in the staff. Like I am a part of it. I can speak my truth. I can say what I need to say. I feel valued. And all of those things in the midst of the community I'm in.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, what you're saying makes so much sense, because it's just part of like a natural progression of like over at first diversity was like a huge thing. Getting people in the positions was the right step that had to happen, because they were not in mm-hmm. the positions, right? They were not being hired. You know, kids are not being taught by teachers of color, things like that. So getting people, you know, right. in the school, in the second, you know, in college for these programs, getting kids taught by these teachers was the first step. And now it's like, okay, now we can see that that's not enough. So now the next piece is this. Because I think people also get kind of stressed out about, oh my gosh, like now this is a new thing and this is a new thing. There's always going to be a new thing. And it's not like a new thing. I mean, the right. goal is the same, right? The goal is like this Star Trek type, you know, world where we right. actually work, you know, all together to accomplish something great. Mm-hmm. But it takes mm-hmm. all these steps to get there, because change is incremental. And that's just how people yeah. are.
Yeah. And I think when you think about, okay, let's having a diverse workspace or a diverse mm-hmm. teaching staff. Initially, I think the purpose was, hopefully the same, like, yeah, right. not to just have someone of color being a part of the staff, but someone of color that contributes to the staff that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, feels valued and safe. So it's one of those things. It's like, yeah, you have folks of color, Black, Indigenous, people of color in the space. Mm-hmm. How are you going to retain these people? How are you going to mm-hmm. make them feel valued and that they're part of it. And the same thing goes with like students, right? And so it's like one of those things, it's like students also need to be able to see people of color, you know what I mean, be a teacher at their school or yes. being a principal at their school or being a leader, you know, some type of leader at their school. They need to see that as well, whether the kids are white, black, purple, or green, you know, they need that. And so how do we do that in a way where everyone feels like they're a part of this inclusive community and feel celebrated, as well as noticing things that we have in common and commonalities as well.
So that's, I really like that foundation that you set for us, because now I'm thinking about, okay, how does this inclusive space support teacher resiliency? How does that make it, like, what is the connection between these two things?
Yeah, that's one of those things. So if you're including, if you have an inclusive space, and let's just say for me as a Black teacher, I'm in that space, you can either help to fill up my resilience cup or keep pushing it. So I have to feel like I have to use my tools so much more, right? And so it's one of those things. And I've been in those spaces where I've had to continuously pour into my resilience cup, continuously do that because I felt like I wasn't valued. I felt like my voice wasn't heard. I felt like I was a token. I felt like, you know what I mean? And so it's not just what's happening inside. It's what's happening on my day to day. Although I was a teacher in the classroom and I love what I did with the students that I was, it was like a constant push and pull as far as my resiliency is concerned. And so the resiliency is not a space to say, okay, continue to be in a toxic work environment, right? For me in that space, it's a resiliency was tied to, do I need to stay in this toxic work environment as much as I love the kids and as much as I do that? How do I continue to fill my resiliency cup, right? And use my tools, but not have to feel like I'm drowning, right? And so in that space, I had to release myself of being in a toxic work environment. And that was a choice that I made in my resiliency, right? And so sometimes there are hard choices you have to make in order to continue to be resilient and continue to, you know, really give yourself the gift of not only being resilient, but just being able to sustain in this world. And so the connection between education and resiliency, or an educator and resiliency, is really getting to know yourself, really getting to know and being self-aware and being able to know what tools you need to use at what time. And sometimes the tools are tools that you're like, oh, like as an educator, leaving a space is so hard. And so it's one of those things of asking yourself the question and making pivots in order to support that.
What are some of the other tools that you're talking about? Like leaving a space would be like, I just cannot survive in this space anymore, right? What are some of the things that you might employ to that before that happens?
Okay, definitely community. So I will say that. So one of those resiliency tools is having a community of folks to help lift you up. So that's definitely a resiliency tool. Another one is speaking life into myself, like affirmations. That's one of the things that I still use to this day. You should see my office with all the sticky notes and affirmations that I have for myself. Personally, for me as a higher being, a higher power, for me, that's God, but my spirituality is definitely something that helped me to be resilient, each and every day, connecting with other people outside of work. So having something for myself outside of work was one of the things early on in education that I didn't do for myself, that I would be really drowning myself in my work and not, and then also taking care of my kids and then not having anything that's just for me outside of that. So maybe even for me, now it's yoga, practicing yoga. And at the time when I'm thinking about it, it was Zumba. It was one of those things I was like, okay, this is something I do for myself. It doesn't always have to be something, an exercise activity, but that does help to build resilience. Whether you're taking a walk outside, it's moving your body is going to be a tool for resilience. And another thing is like breathing exercises and my breath and meditation. And those are things that really help me. So those are some examples of a resiliency tool belt that looks different on everyone. Like if it's invisible, but like for everybody, it would look so different for what your needs are. But those are some tools that really help me to be resilient.
Yeah. Thank you. So if an instructional coach is listening who, you know, obviously we're not administration, we're in this weird little limbo place in between admin and teachers. Yeah. How can a coach go about supporting inclusive spaces just through their own actions and interactions with teachers? Because sometimes we have admin that is not really being thoughtful about inclusion, whether it's for, you know, where we're not really including people of color or people of different genders or people of, you know, different ethnicities and so, or languages, you know, maybe we're, cause like where I work, for example, in El Paso, Texas, the majority of people are bilingual and it's a very common thing in certain spaces for Spanish to be spoken, you know, just conversationally. And I mean, many of our schools have dual language programs where Spanish is taught, you know, for a large chunk of the day. So many of our teachers are bilingual as well. And so that, you know, I mean, it's gone pretty much are the days of, oh, we don't speak Spanish here. Certainly not here. That's not something I ever hear here. I know that happens in different places. People are harassed for speaking of different languages other than English. Yeah. Or accent is another one. So, you know, people who are faced with, like, if someone is bilingual and goes to another place, if they do have an accent other than like a standard American accent, American English accent, you know, those are all people who may feel less included. And so sometimes administration they're not purposefully including people, like they're not creating these spaces, but the coach may recognize that problem and be like, okay, what can I do? Because this is creating really bad morale. This is creating a really icky place that people don't want to be in.
I would say it's time for you to coach up. And I know that's really hard. And when I say coach up, I mean coach up to your administration, because as an instructional coach, you may not have the power to make that change, but you have influence. And so one of those things is what I would say is to coach up to your administration. And when you see things happening, to speak up and say something, right? And it's one of those things that, again, you may have sweaty pits doing it, and do it anyway. Have a respectful conversation where you're coaching up. But I think you should have also, when you're coaching up to administration and to leadership, is to have evidence to support some of the things that you're saying, right? And so not just having a general statement, but saying, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the fact that we serve, let's just say, we're talking about this during Black History Month, but like, let's just say we have 70% Black students, and I haven't seen us talk about Black History Month not one time, right? We have, you know, Indigenous Peoples Month, or, you know, this. And we haven't talked about that. We haven't been, and not just in a month, but like ongoing, right? Let's just say, you know, and so those are just some examples I'm thinking of the top of my head right now, but like, you should have evidence where it's not occurring when you're going to coach up with your administration and why it's so important. I feel like that's so hard for me to say, because I feel like people should know why it's important. But it's important when you're going to coach up to have that evidence there. Mm-hmm. And then maybe having some solutions. Hey, I was thinking about doing da 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 da. I'm doing this time. Think about that. Like, you know, and this is why I want to do that. That's one way, is coaching up. Another way is having conversations, like, let's say, hopefully you have relationships with your teachers where your teachers come to you anyway. So they may come to you and say, I have a problem with the fact that I feel like I'm not included in a lot of the things, or my culture is not included, or, you know, in some of the things that we do around the school, or I have a problem with that. And so having those conversations with the folks that you coach is going to be also important, right? And it's important for the folks that you coach to know that you're an advocate for them. So you're going to be advocating for them in places that they may not be in. You're going to lift their names up, or their culture up, or the inclusivity up in every space that you're in. And then before all of that is wondering, like, thinking about why is this important to you as a coach, right? Your purpose in that. So taking it back to even yourself and knowing, this is important to me because, right? And thinking through that. even before you have any of these conversations, why is that important to you in being an instructional coach? And so I would even say start there and then go to other spaces. But yeah, those are some things that come up for me in thinking about ways to coach and be an instructional coach with influence. Because as an instructional coach, you have influence. Mm-hmm. You do. You feel like you're in the middle sometimes. Sometimes I used to feel like I'm like being tugged from like admin and being tugged for, you know, you feel like that. But the truth of the matter is you do have influence. You have influence. And so there is agency in that. And I would say use that to for the good, for the good of all.
You mentioned lifting up someone's culture in these different settings. What does it look like to lift up somebody's culture?
Oh, it can look at so many different ways. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So it would be just getting to know someone, like getting even on a team, right? A lot of folks that I would be on a team with didn't know that I was had a Creole background. And you probably didn't know that. Like I have a Creole background. And they would say, what does that mean? Like having conversation when you're, especially when you're trying, even when you're trying to build teams. So let's just even think about, you know, we're there for the kids, but right now let's think about a teacher team. Mm-hmm. For you to really work well with your teacher team, like really well with them, is really to get to know who they are. How do they identify? Mm-hmm. Right. And so some of that is just having conversations about that. And then some folks are like, well, we don't have time. Well, you have to make time in order to cultivate those relationships, because that does help in collaborating and working together as a team when you know who that's from. So then if you're like, if you're doing a project, you're starting to do this project, let's say, you're bringing in different businesses and talking about economics. Well, you would naturally, because you know, like, oh my goodness, Nita, why don't you bring in some Black-owned businesses, right? Like, what are some Black-owned businesses that can come and talk to our kids, right? What about some other things? So, like, bringing that inclusivity already in there. The more you get used to, like, it's everyone bringing it in to the folks so that our kids can see different cultures, different people, Black-owned businesses, you know, Latinx businesses coming in, right, and bringing it in. That's what we do naturally, right? And so inclusivity, just we're starting to fight against white supremacy, right? In the sense that like it's always going to be this way. Mm-hmm. No, like we come from a host of different backgrounds and experiences, and bringing that in. And so if you know that that's how I identify, and I know that's how you identify, we're like, yes, let's bring in pieces of ourselves into our day, pieces of our children into our day, right? So having those same type of conversations with our students, right? With our administration. So then we know like each other in a way that what defines us, right? And what has built us up into the people that we are each and every day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's just an example.
Yeah, I like that. I can remember planning a unit about like nursery rhymes. And I was planning with some of our bilingual, dual language first grade teachers. And I don't have a knowledge of nursery rhymes in Spanish. Like I don't have a knowledge of Mexican nursery rhymes. You know, I don't. And so, you know, they were like, oh, well, we used to say this one, or we knew this one. And, you know, this is one that was like handed down. So they were able to compile, you know, a list of things that they wanted to share with their students because they, you know, we used them to teach the things that we had to teach, but we were, you know, accessing this cultural knowledge that they had. That I did not have, you know, I wasn't raised speaking Spanish or any of those things. So like even within a race or an ethnicity, you know, you can have, there's so many differences still that it's not just about, you know, oh, Mexican heritage, Mexican American heritage. Okay. But that's like, that's a piece of my identity. But like the farther you go back, there's all, and like my parents, my mom is actually white and my dad is Hispanic. And so like, there's a lot going on there, you know? And, when did they cross, you know, what generation am I? Like, I'm not like first generation, like my husband is, you know, I'm like fifth generation. So things are, it's just very different. And then we have, you know, teachers who were raised in Mexico and came over as adults and, you know, and gained their citizenship and things later in life. And so people have so much to bring to the table, and it is so interesting. Once we can start talking to people about their experiences, whether that is race or gender or whatever background it is, because there's so much out there that we like, it's like reading a book, you know what I mean? Like lives you haven't lived.
And it's so, it's, it's one of those things to know that, like, you know, like for me, like Black folks aren't a monolith, right? We come from different backgrounds, like basically what you're saying. And it's so interesting, right? And so, like, if I know that I'm curious and interested, and I'm 44 years old, right? Thinking about what a 14-year-old in a classroom would want to, like, you pour into them, right? Knowledge that you have, but they also bring their own knowledge and background to the space as well, right? And so inclusivity to me is like threading it all together and then realizing you have to add more thread because there's so much, there's so much to add. And once you kind of open the door to that curiosity and that healthy discussion around being inclusive, whatever you're bringing in, it's, you know, to me, it's just a sweet spot. And so it's like when folks fight against it, I don't understand it, you know, because because it's just so sweet. And it's interesting because, you know, when I was a teacher, I'm always a teacher, but, you know, when I was in schools in classrooms, you know, and I would teach lessons, you know, that of, like, let's say of different cultures and things like that. The kids would just, they would just be sponges. I mean, they would eat it up and they would love it. And they would talk about their own and where they connect and where it's different and where they, you know, and it's, and I would see that as an educator. So that, I guess I just don't, that's what makes it so hard for me when folks try to fight against, you know, inclusive spaces or inclusivity. You know, I just saw something online about in Florida, they were having like a, and I don't know what part of Florida, a permission slip. So parents had to write, assign a permission slip for a book to be read by, a, like it was a book by a Black author, and they had to send these permission slips out. And I'm like, what? Like, where are we? Like, you know, it's like one of those things, it's like, you know, really, really need to like push against that. You know, it's one of those, and so, when you're thinking about inclusive spaces and you're thinking about that is a, that is closing the door and making things just one-sided. And we are multifaceted. I think it's important to just be a whole human being and, you know, and to just be in community with others and love others. Like I don't understand it, but
yeah. So how can people keep learning from you? If they want to learn more about your work, what can they, where can they go?
Oh, okay. So they can find me at Love Teach Plus on Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. They can find me on there as well. I am on Twitter too, but I don't engage in Twitter as much. And then also me and my husband wrote a book. It's called Every Connection Matters, and we're talking about building, maintaining, and restoring relationships. And so, yeah, that book just came out through AICD, and I'm super excited about it. And yeah, that's where they can find me.
That's awesome. The book looks fantastic. I saw it the other day as well online, and I'm really excited about it. And I hope some people grab it to learn from you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. All right, Coach, I hope that gave you some things to think about as you are working with your teams and your schools. Next week, we are starting a new little series about better instruction, and I have the fantastic Karen Hess as my guest. I really look forward to sharing that episode with you because we're going to talk all about rigor by design, not by chance, how we plan for it and support teachers in creating rigorous and awesome lessons. So I will share that with you next week. And until then, happy coaching. Now that you've got so much to think about, head over to buzzingwithmissb.com to grab some free downloads, become a VIB, and check out the podcast show notes. Happy coaching!